Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, checking on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Altvater. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Well, Carlos, I have to admit, I'm just a little bit sad this week. It's 8 months until April and the next major at the Masters. However, we do have a FedEx Cup, Solheim Cup, President's Cup, Race to Dubai, and the start of the 2016 PGA Tour season to talk about for the foreseeable future. So, cheer up, Buttercup. Let's go.
Let's go. And our VIG's very important guest of the week will be David Schaffer, Marketing Director for Imperial Hat Company, and Kristen Jungen. She's the voice and soul behind Soul Soup Incorporated. You don't want to miss any of those two interviews. Great interviews for us today. But we have to start with the weekend backspin, recapping the weekend's action. Whoa, Jason Day held off Jordan Spieth to win his first major title at the 97th PGA Championship on Sunday. The winds, you know, were benign calm throughout most of the week at the picturesque Whistling Straits, which led to some unusually low scores. And Jason Day, he took advantage as he became the first golfer to finish 20 under par in a major, breaking Tiger Woods' 19-under performance at the British Open in 2000. He came into the week with 9 top 10s in his first 20 major championship appearances, but never had managed to get over the edge. That changed everything this week, however, as he shot 4 straight rounds in the 60s to hoist the Wanamaker Trophy in style. Day became the first Australian to win the PGA Championship since Steve Elkington in 1995, and the first Australian to win a major since Adam Scott won the Masters in 2013. Day's season seemed to be in jeopardy after he collapsed at the U.S. Open with vertigo-like symptoms, but he got back out on the course and proved why he's one of the world's top golfers. He was noticeably emotional on the 18th green. I don't know if you saw, before he even took his final putt. I mean, he was already crying, and finally when the moment sunk in and he finally rushed out to congratulate him, oh, the tears were pouring out. Spieth, wow, he drew the windy end of the draw on Thursday, but he kept his composure and nearly won his third major of the season. What a season he's been having. He would have become the first player to do so in 2000, since Woods in 2000. He shot a 4-under-68 to finish at 17-under for the tournament, but couldn't do enough to unseat the long-hitting Day. He did manage to break a record despite the loss, as he finished the year's 4 majors at a combined 54-under. One shot better than Woods' previous record of 53-under. He also jumped to number 1 in the world. Brendan Grace and Justin Rose, they both also made a Sunday charge, but they fall down, especially Rose, who hit a couple of loose shots down the stretch to finish 4th at 14-under. Behind Rose were Bruce Koepka and Anirban Lahiri, who finished in a tie for 5th at 13-under, becoming the highest finish by a player from India on the PGA Tour. And it wouldn't be a major championship without a Dustin Johnson collapse. This time, he took a quadruple bogey 8 on the first hole Sunday to fall all the way back to 5-under out of any contention. What he did after that was even more shocking, though. After the quad, he rattled off 6 birdies and 2 eagles to finish in a tie for 7th at 12-under. What a talent is Dustin Johnson. Also, Rory McIlroy was back in the field for the first time since hurting his ankle playing soccer back in July and looked sharp. Despite the lengthy layoff, he finished in 17 by himself at 9-under. The surprising missed cuts. Well, I don't know that missing a cut now is a surprising thing for Tiger Woods. But he did miss a cut. I expected him at least to make it. And Adam Scott and Zach Johnson, definitely, I didn't expect that. So, Fred, how about Jason Day breakthrough win at the PGA Championship?
Well, Carlos, I'm going to warn you right now. If you know, if you're hungry, you may want to go make a sandwich. You want to take a little nap. You got some time here. Unless you hit the mute button, man, you're out.
It's
right
fair.
Now.
It's fair. I took about 5 minutes, so it's fair. It's okay. Go ahead.
Hey, when I started writing up my comments today, I got excited all over again. It's been 2 days since that final putt at Whistling Straits, and I still have that warm, fuzzy feeling. Jason Day, his first major championship win, 10 top tens in his last 20 majors, including 3 runners-up, 1/3, and 2 T4s. This win at Whistling Straits was his 3rd top 10 in a major this year. After a bunch of close calls, he went out and just won this thing. He birdied 4 of the first 7 holes, didn't let anyone, especially Spieth, get a run at him. He added 3 more birdies on the back for good measure. He was in complete control of his game, especially his driver. Dave gave credit to his mother and Colin Swanton, his caddy, father, confident coach. He said about Swanton, "He's taken me from a kid who was getting in fights at home and getting drunk at 12 and not heading in the right direction to a major champion. There's not many coaches that can say that in many sports." Only fitting that Swanton received a hero's welcome when he returned home to Australia yesterday. Ron Green Jr. wrote a great column about Day's progress and Swan's influence on him and his mother's work and getting him to that school and getting him into golf. Really good stuff. Jordan Spieth, what can you say? 54 unders in the majors, in 4 majors. You know, win at the Masters and the U.S. Open. T4, just 1 shot back of the playoff at the Open Championship. And runner-up at the PGA in 4 majors this season. Unbelievable stuff. He's earned over $10 million for the year, moves to number 1 in the world, all at the tender age of 21. Pretty heady stuff. Did you see what Spieth said today on the 18th green? "It's by far the best consolation, by far the best loss I've ever had. What I saw at the end of that PGA Championship was 2 very classy guys, with Jason Day and Jordan Spieth standing on the 18th green. Spieth was as happy for Day to win as he would have been for himself." I went to the players page today at PGAtour.com to get these numbers for Spieth, and what did I see but Tiger Woods still in the big spot at the top of the page. I wonder how much longer it'll take him to replace Woods with Jordan Spieth. Well, speaking of the numbers, he's now number 1 in the FedEx Cup, which he has been by a lot, but he's also number 1 in the world. This year, he's had 4 wins, 4 runner-ups, 1/3, 14 top 10s in 21 starts. Those are Tiger-like numbers, folks. Oh, yeah. Like I said, he's earned over $10 million with the FedEx Cup playoffs yet to play. He has a humongous lead, and even with the reset, he has to be the favorite. He could win another couple of million prize money and take home the $10 million bonus, too. Since the end of May at the Crown Plaza, he has 7 top 10s in 8 starts, including 2 wins and 2 runners-up. I've said this before. Spieth has the persona of Arnold Palmer with a little John Wayne mixed in. So honest and forthright that the media just loves him. And we're going to talk about that after a bit. But, you know, other players of note. Rory finished 17th, minus 9. Ankle looked good, just a bit rusty maybe. Played well on the weekend, 68-69. Though he does lose his number 1 spot in the official world golf ranking. Dustin Johnson contended all week but carted that terrible snowman to start the final round. Played unbelievable after that, had 5 birdies and 2 eagles from number 5 to number 16. If you're keeping score, that's 9 under par for 12 holes in a major championship on a very difficult Whistling Straits golf course. Absolutely mind-boggling, Carlos. If he ever learns to control that head of his, he is just going to be unbeatable. South African Brandon Grace, you mentioned him. He made a run at Day on the front 9 on Sunday with 4 birds. But double bogeys are always lurking at Whistling Straits to ruin an otherwise perfect round of golf. and he made an unfortunate double at the short par 4 10th to essentially knock him out of contention. Everybody's knocking it up there in front of that green off the tee, and just a little chip shot, just a little bump and run onto the green. He hits it just about 10 yards too far up on the hill, ends up hitting it out of the bad lie, ends up hitting it over the green. He's just dead meat back there. Like I say, doubles are always lurking. Justin Rose put up a good fight until a double bogey got him at number 13. The first 3 hours of watching Grace, Rose, and Spieth trying to catch Day, and then the last hour and a half watching Day finish like a champion, really good theater at the PGA Championship. Really, really turned out well, and the pictures of Lake Michigan and Whistling Straits were outstanding. You know, another side note of the PGA Championship, we don't often talk about professional golfers from India, but you mentioned Anirban Lahiri, who won the long drive contest. He ended up finishing T5 in the tournament. He's only 5 feet 9, 170 pounds, but he hit it 327 yards on the par 5 second hole during the Tuesday practice round. Pretty much everybody else drove it out of the fairway, into the rough, whatever. Bubba, Rory, Dustin, you know. So he did get $25,000 donation to his charity and a nice gold money clip. Other notables, Brooks Koepka. We have always been watching him for the last couple years. Had a great week, finishes minus 13 T5, made all four cuts in the majors. Phil Mickelson, you remember him. He made the cut, finished T18 at minus 8. Pretty good showing for Phil, really. Tiger, you mentioned, trunk slamming again on Friday. He is signed to play this week and win the championship. Is he going to show up? The Bahamas may be calling his name. He just doesn't seem to have his heart in it anymore. Of the 20 pros at the club pros that made the field, Brian Gaffney from New York was a low club pro at the PGA, and congrats to him. Carlos, back to you. That's my rant. That's my wrap-up of the PGA Championship, and what a good one it was.
I'm sorry, you finished? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were going to...
Already?
Already. I mean, what's up?
Already?
Some more coffee or something like that.
Wake up.
Yeah, let me wake up. No. I mean, it was an incredible tournament, and we're going to be talking about the majors and the practice range, so I'll leave everything else that I was going to say for then. But definitely for Jason Day, all I can add is that everybody that you read about, Justin Rose, Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, who said he lost his number one to Jordan Spieth, but hey, he was graceful that, you know, Jason Day finally won his major. And I mean, he's such a great person, such a great guy to see finally overcoming all those problems that he's had and fulfilling his potential by winning that. And he said now that he wants to be now the best in the world. So, Jordan, hey, you wanted to be the best in the world. You did it. Now, Jason says that. So, you know, you're going to have some pretty stiff competition between there, Ricky Fowler, Rory McIlroy, and now Jason Day. I can't wait. I mean, like you said, I can't wait to see the Masters next year. So we'll see what happens there. Hey, there was another tournament as well this weekend, and it was on the LPGA. And really, really, it was just a matter of time, wasn't it? Brooke Henderson, she was on collision path with victory on the LPGA Tour. And on Sunday, she scored a direct hit, logging an 8-shot win at the Cambia LPGA Portland Classic to become the third youngest champion in LPGA Tour history at 17 years, 11 months, 6 days. Yes, she's 17. Do you remember that? Not old enough to drink the champagne that was poured over her after she held out the final putt, but clearly mature enough to deal with the head gremlins that can plague anyone who goes to Sunday with a lead. It did seem inevitable that she would predict that she would get a win. Since turning pro in last December, Henderson has won on the Suncoast Tour and the Symetra Tour. She held the lead after 3 rounds on the LPGA Tour Swinging Skirts Classic, wasn't able to close, but still, she showed all year long her talent was there. Henderson wasn't in the field of the tournament a week ago. She had to qualify on Monday to earn a spot. No Monday qualifier had won an event since 2000, so now she joins Laurel Keane as the other Monday qualifiers to win an event on the LPGA. Keane did that on the 2000 Rail Classic. But now, with a spot in the tournament, Henderson merely had to let her clubs do the talking. Her win is the first by a Canadian on the LPGA Tour since Laurie Kane back in 2001. And let me tell you, that was big news across Canada, extending beyond typical golf and sports media. It went into the mainstream news and great coverage about it. You know, it's the way that she's played this year, it's hard not to think that she has a huge upside. Major championships, high up the world rankings, she's already up to number 17, money list titles, perhaps even win at home, something that she that hasn't been done since Jocelyne Bourassa won the La Canadienne back in 1973. The timing of her win probably couldn't be better to accomplish that. She arrived in Vancouver late Sunday ahead of the Canadian Pacific Women's Open. She'll no doubt be front and center all week, and that may very well be the next part of maturing as a professional. You know, with so much attention, lots of offers from media and sponsors, not just this week, but in the coming months, she'll need to learn how to say no to ensure she reserves time for her game and her practice. This is a tournament, hey, there was a lot of competition. Lydia Ko was there, Stacey Lewis was there, and she got her breakthrough LPGA Tour victory. But she will have to wait a little longer to become a Tour member. She said afterwards that she wasn't thinking so far on petitioning LPGA membership again this week. She just wanted to celebrate, and then she'll take it over. But anyways, she's assured of finishing in the top 40 in earnings, so she will earn a Tour card in 2016
for it. Yeah, we've been following her all year. Matter of fact, we had her on the show. Jeff Minor talked to her out at the U.S. Women's Open, if you remember, and I followed her here in the Monday qualifier for the Marathon Classic. She came up a shy in that, but, you know, she got it done. Won by 8 shots. I mean, just an emphatic win. You know, LPGA Tour membership, only 17 years old. You know, Lydia Ko, Lexi Thompson, these young ladies, Minji Lee, I mean, they just keep coming. She had a solid amateur career, winning the Canadian Women's Amateur and placing runner-up in the 2014 U.S. Women's Amateur. She finished inside the top 10 at the 2014 U.S. Women's Open at Pinehurst and won 3 events on the CN Canadian Women's Professional Tour. When she decided to turn professional, she was the number one ranked women's amateur in the world. With this $195,000 first place check, she goes to over $600,000 in earnings for the year. As you mentioned, she's number would put her about number 16 on the money list, so she's for sure going to be in the top 40 now at the end of the year. Can you imagine if she was in the U.S. and could be eligible for the Solheim Cup? What a story that would be. You know, just like Jordan Spieth back in 2013 going with, you know, no status at all, winning and getting a place on the President's Cup team. I mean, she's just having one of those years, just a storybook kind of thing. And speaking of young ladies, you know, we had the U.S. Women's Amateur also. I don't know if anybody watched it. It was on Fox. While Jason Day was winning in Wisconsin and Brooke Henderson was winning in Portland, 16-year-old Hannah O'Sullivan won the U.S. Women's Amateur. A high school senior to be, Carlos, started the day 3 down through 15 holes but took the lead for good on the 24th hole to capture the 2015 U.S. Women's Amateur at Portland Country Club over Sierra Brooks. Only 16 years old, she's committed to USC for 2016. She made that's assuming she graduates from high school, I guess. She made it to the semifinals last year at the U.S. Women's Am. This year, she became the youngest winner on the Sumatra Tour in February by winning the Gateway Classic. She made the cut at the U.S. Women's Open and teamed with Robin Ree to finish runner-up in the women's four-ball at Bandon Dunes earlier this year. She has had quite a year. So, here we go. Look out, Lydia, Lexi, and Brooke. There's more youth coming to the LPGA Tour soon. Jessica Korda's younger sister, Nellie, tied for third place in the medalist portion of the U.S. Women's Amateur, and with dad, Peter Korda, on the bag, but was eliminated in the match play portion, which allowed her to spend the afternoons walking Portland Country Club and watch big sis Jessica play in the Cambia Portland Classic. 2013 U.S. Women's Amateur champion and 2014 NCAA champ, Emma Talley from Alabama, did not compete in this year's Women's Am, due to competing at the first leg of LPGA Q School near San Diego. Time constraints would not have allowed her to get a practice round prior to the start of Women's Am. So, Carlos, this young talent just keeps getting younger, deeper. It's just unbelievable in the women's game. Where will it end? I mean, they're going to start joining the tour right out of the crib.
Yeah, they're going to be maybe a junior circuit sitting now instead of the semi-pro tour. We'll see. Hey, any other final words on the weekend backspin before we go into the Par 5 news that you would have for us?
No, I'm good. I'm ready to get to the news.
Okay, so let's take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to be right away with the Par 5 news presented by United Golf Network, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at @edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. And since we were talking PGA, and I know that Fred still could be talking a lot more about it, let's start the Par 5 News with a tee shot from Fred talking about, you know, Pete Bevacqua, the PGA's CEO, addressing the media at the PGA Championship.
Yeah, along with PGA Championship comes a mandatory press conference with the CEO, Pete Bevacqua. You know, the PGA had previously announced the cancellation of the Grand Slam of Golf being held at Trump National in California due to Trump's immigration rants. But Bevacqua announced that both the 2017 Senior PGA at Trump's course near Washington, D.C. and 2022 PGA to be held at Trump Bedminster, New Jersey were still scheduled to go on as planned. Both of those are scheduled. Obviously, everybody in this room is aware of the situation in presidential politics we don't want to get involved in. We're not here to talk about presidential politics. He did not rule out having the Grand Slam back at Trump National near Los Angeles next year. He added, "We haven't made those decisions. We didn't want the Grand Slam or any of our events to be compromised by politics or to be any kind of political football. We are certainly considering options for the Grand Slam this year and in the future. We have a relationship with the Trump Organization as a golf entity. That's what we're focused on. The Trump Organization is certainly a factor in golf. There's no doubt about that. The Trump Organization is also an employer of PGA of America members. That's critical. We're monitoring the situation, as we have said publicly. We certainly don't comment necessarily on presidential politics. We don't agree with everything that's been said or done, but we're monitoring the situation. And we made the one decision about the Grand Slam. We haven't made really more decisions than that, other than what's already previously scheduled." You know, it appears as if the PGA finally realized just how important Donald Trump is to its golf operations, and it's kind of treading water somewhat and hopes all this Trump rhetoric will fade into dust in the not-too-distant future. And Trump venues for PGA events will not be a media issue. He was also asked about discussions about holding a PGA championship outside the U.S., especially in Australia, as he had mentioned, might be possible back in 2013. He refused to completely rule out the prospect of Australia's best courses, like Royal Melbourne, for example, being considered for the fourth major of the year in the future, but with the venues already selected through 2022, no clear plan to deviate from U.S.-based courses, it looks more and more unlikely. "Have we talked and done an analysis of international PGA championship? Absolutely. We have learned some very interesting lessons from that, both positives and negatives. But I would say for the moment it's on the back burner. It's certainly not forgotten. It's something we'll always consider, always keep on top of the mind. But the larger role and the larger goal of our strategic plan is to make sure that the PGA of America influence and great relationships we have around the globe are strengthened and increased and are magnified as we move forward." Boy, does that sound like political rhetoric. With huge sponsorship money available in the U.S., the PGA of America cannot afford to move the PGA Championship outside the continental U.S. Maybe 20 years from now, some deep-pocket Asian corporation wants to pay to bring it to the Far East, then yes. But I seriously doubt anyone in Australia has the kind of dollars it will take to bring a major tournament down under. The PGA also announced two locations for future KPMG Women's PGA tournaments. You know, that was such a huge success this year with the first year going out. Olympia Fields Country Club in Chicago side this week's U.S. Men's Amateur and Kemper Lakes Golf Club will host consecutive KPMG Women's PGA Championships in 2017 and 2018. So, there's your PGA of America news, Carlos, with Pete Bavakwa front and center. And I believe you're going to talk a little bit about Mike Kaiser running into some minor problems out there in Oregon with some Bandon Dunes expansion.
Before I move into that, let me just clarify that we haven't left Donald Trump out of the news.
I wanted you to catch that. I slid him in there. Did you see that? Did you notice that?
Yeah, see, that was slick. We don't miss a chance to get Donald Trump into the news.
Just wanted we didn't do a Donald Trump segment tonight, but we got him in there, by golly.
We got him in there. So the streak continues. We're still alive. Still alive. So anyway.
You didn't go to sleep. You were listening.
No, I was listening. You see? Anyway, talking about Mike Kaiser, you know, the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department wants the owner of Bandon Dunes Golf Resort to explain why his crews last summer caught a road across state dunes, sunk three test wells, and left behind a large storage tank. A park ranger last week discovered the intrusion into the Bandon State Natural Area. The Parks Department has agreed to sell 280 acres of the parkland to Chicago golf developer Mike Kaiser, but the deal has yet to close. Regulatory hurdles remain before Kaiser's company, Bandon Biota, can take title. Parks officials said Kaiser, who intends to build a 27-hole course on the coastal property, didn't consult the agency or get permission for the construction work. The sales contract allows only non-intrusive setting testings on the site before the property is transferred. Even then, the work has to be mandated by government regulation. State Parks Director Liz Assumption sought an explanation for how the construction work could be considered non-intrusive and what regulation required the actions. She did so in a letter last week sent to Kaiser's attorney, Steve Corey. Corey on Monday confirmed the site work but contended the contract provides for such access and that it was necessary to comply with county requirements. The well work renews controversy over a deal that has drawn critics from the start. It has coastal watchdogs calling upon parks leaders to reconsider their sale to Bandon Biota. Cameron LaFollette, who is the executive director of the Oregon Coast Alliance, said they have always opposed this project and they will do so more firmly right now. You know, in an unprecedented move last year, the State Parks Commission agreed for this sale. So, you know, it was about $2.5 million and two other coastal parcels, plus money to control invasive plants on the south coast. But the lawyer, Steve Corey, said that the drilling was part of Bandon Biota's due diligence process to obtain cross-county's land use permits. A Coos County planner said neither Kaiser nor his company have any current applications on file with the planning department. He also said that no public agency required Bandon Biota to do the work. As part of the process, the commercial well driller who drilled the holes at Bandon State Natural Area reported the test wells to the State Water Resources Department, listing Kaiser and Bandon Dunes as the owner of the park property. Diana Enright, who's spokeswoman for the Water Resources Department, said the agency inspectors would have acted if the report had accurately listed the state as the owner. That would have alerted the State Parks Agency earlier to the construction work. Then Jim Mack, whose Bandon Well and Pump Company drilled the test holes, said one of Kaiser's employees assured him the Parks Department had approved the work. He said he intended to correct the ownership information he filed with the state. Then LaFollette, the executive director of the Coastal Watchdogs, wants more than a corrected form. She argued the construction amounts to criminal trespass and vandalism of public land. Bandon Biota, she says, should face charges, and the state should call off the sale. The Parks Department is awaiting on the developer's response before considering any action, so we'll keep this posted and very close watch because, you know, Mike Kaiser seems to be running into some problems in that development of his new golf course there in Oregon.
Is it just me, Carlos, or does this seem like a much ado about nothing? He's got it bought. They've agreed to do it. What is the big deal if he digs a couple test holes? Just change the deed and let's go on. What is the deal?
What I see is, like, how you call a non-invasive test, how you're going to really test that. if you don't do those drillings, how are you going to test the land? I mean, just by watching it, oh, yeah, it's firm. Let me step on it. It's going to be okay. That's ridiculous, really.
Yeah, that is absolutely ridiculous. Hey, Jeff Shackelford had a piece on his site to discuss the CBS and TNT coverage of the PGA Championship. I just can't get away from the PGA, Carlos. I got to talk about it some more. Via a service that tracks every shot during a televised golf tournament, CBS averaged 1.05 strokes per minute. That does not seem like very many. A slight decrease over 2014's 1.16 rate. Social media critics railed against CBS for playing too many interviews, highlights, and features rather than solid golf shots. They also seem to stay on certain players way too long. Everyone complained on social media about the number of times Omega ran Rory McIlroy sitting in the Hall of Fame commercial. I got so tired of hearing that thing. It seemed to play at every commercial break all 4 days on TNT and CBS. But the numbers speak for themselves. Final round coverage of the PGA Championship on Sunday was down 15% from last year, but it was up 16% from 2013. And despite the double-digit drop, the rating is the second highest for final round coverage of the event since Tiger Woods finished second in 2009. If you remember last year, we had the Rory McIlroy, Ricky Fowler, Phil Mickelson, debacle at the end there at Valhalla in the dark and all that good stuff, playing in as a foursome or whatever. Excluding the Masters, it also had the highest overnight rating for a golf telecast this year, topping the final round of the U.S. Open on Fox. This is the second straight year the PGA Championship has been the top non-Masters draw. The U.S. Open final round aired in East Coast and Central prime time windows, with an equally compelling leaderboard, so that's not a great visual for the USGA and Fox. You know, they did have prime time because they're out there on the West Coast, and they still didn't beat the PGA that finished up, 7:30, 8 o'clock Eastern, something like that. The USO, TNT also had a good week. TNT coverage, the morning coverage, was up 45% from last year. It was the network's highest final round coverage since 2010. Golf Channel, their PGA Championship week's viewership may be 2013 and 2014 is the most watched ever, in spite of being completely wiped out on Saturday morning because of the holdover of round two had to be finished early Saturday morning. So the whole bottom line here is, Carlos, that there was a lot of rumbling on Twitter about CBS lack of live golf, too many features and other stuff that distracted from it. I didn't mind it, excuse me, although it did seem a bit sluggish at times. It's still Jim Nance, Faldo, Faraday, McCord, Baker, Casas, and Nablo are still the best in the business, just as we saw in the Masters, the U.S. Open, the USA, and the Open Championship. Jordan Spieth brings television viewership much the way Tiger Woods did 10 years ago. And I think we can still all agree that CBS and TNT is a lot better than Fox. Back to you, Carlos.
Have to agree. 100% agree. Absolutely. Hey, some sad news now. After seemingly coming to a happy end, the saga of Billy Hurley's father took a tragic and final turn last Thursday morning. In July, as you might remember, Billy's dad, Willard Hurley, went missing for 12 days last month from his family in Leesburg, Virginia. Hurley, on a PGA press conference at the Quicken Loans National near his hometown, broke down in front of the cameras and tearfully pleaded for his father to come home and made an emotional request to the media and public to help his father and his family locate him. Days after Billy's announcement, the Leesburg Police Department said the 61-year-old Hurley had been found in a library in Texarkana in Texas, watching his son playing the Quicken Loans National online on July 31st. He told the police then that only that he had been traveling and he returned home to Virginia. Unfortunately, on Thursday morning at the PGA Championship, it was announced in a statement from Hurley's management company that the elder Hurley had died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. After being discovered, Hurley Sr. traveled to his home, to his family in Virginia, where his body was discovered. A Naval Academy graduate, Billy Hurley served as a naval officer for 5 years and served in the Persian Gulf for 2007 to 2009 before earning his PGA Tour card. He now lives in Annapolis, Maryland. He didn't qualify for the PGA Championship. He had finished T25 at the previous week at the Barracuda Championship. He's now living with his family in Leesburg, Virginia. His father and mother had been married for more than 30 years and still lived in Leesburg House, where Hurley had grown up in. Willard Hurley had served in the local police force for 25 years before retiring and had even helped to provide security for one of the courses where his son now competes. His family said that he also worked at the Reston Bible Church for 30 years and had no history of mental illness. Billy Hurley has released the following statement, and I quote, "I want to thank the PGA Tour, the greater golf media, and all those who provided their support, prayers, and encouragement. The PGA Tour community has always taken great care of us, and my family and I are very grateful for that. As soon as I'm able, I will return to golf and will provide further comment. This is very sad news, and here at the Back Nine Report, we offer Billy Hurley our condolences, thoughts, and prayer going out to him and his loved ones during this very difficult time frame."
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Evidently, he had some things bothering him. That's why he took off in the first place. So, you know, those kind of things happen sometimes. Sorry to hear. Hey, Carlos, to wrap up the Par 5 news tonight, this is kind of a story right out of the Twilight Zone. A golfer playing in a tournament in Virginia posted a 57, Carlos, with three, not one, not two, three holes in one in a single 18-hole round. Now, this is even where it gets weirder, okay? Two of those holes in one came on par four holes. Patrick Wills carries a plus four handicap, so obviously he's a pretty good golfer, and is a 59-year-old retired Marine. He was playing with three companions, his two sons, Charlie and Christopher, and an Afghanistan combat veteran. Christopher is an Afghanistan combat veteran, as well as Air Force Major Matt Gormley at Laurel Hill Golf Club in Lorton, Virginia on June 22nd. He does understand, however, that his fantastic round may be met with some justified skepticism. He said, "I've been around the world 10 or 12 times fighting for this country's freedom. People are allowed to believe what they want to believe. I fought for that freedom, but I know what I shot. My playing partners know what I shot, and the people at the tournament do as well. I mean, I'm an accomplished amateur. I set my first course record when I was 16, shot a 65, and I've added a few since then. Anyone that has ever played a competitive round with me, they know what I'm capable of. They've seen it. So people are entitled to believe what they want, but I've always been drawn to golf because it aligns with my morals. I'd rather call a penalty on myself or even disqualify myself because I respect the game." You know, Laurel Hill Golf Club is not a pitch and putt. It's a par 71 layout, which hosted the 2013 U.S. Amateur Pub Links Championship. So, you know, it has a little bit of history there. Wills birdied four of his first six holes, even dropping a shot on the par 3 fourth hole. But the highlights began on number 7, a par 4 measuring 278 yards. Will said he had the distance of 250 to the front of the green. He just hit a little baby draw 3-wood, Carlos. I mean, 250, a little baby draw, and then went to go find the ball. "I was trying to be realistic, so I started looking on the back of the green. I was pleasantly surprised, to say the least, when he found it in the hole." You know, it sounds like that TV commercial where the dog runs out, you know, and drops in the hole and stuff. I wonder if that... Anyhow, Wills made the turn in 29. Three holes later, he hit a driver on the 311-yard 10th hole. The shot looked pretty good, but Wills was still shocked when his playing partners told him the ball was in the hole again. Hole in one on a par 4? Come on, give me a break. "I literally said to myself, get real. I thought they were teasing me. Never in my wildest imagination did I think I could get multiple ones in the same round. His imagination needed to get even wilder. At the par 3 14th hole, which was playing 176 yards, he jarred a 5-iron. The playing partners were totally dumbfounded, but he tried to keep calm. I still had 4 more holes to play. I knew I had a special round going. I didn't want to throw that away. He played his final 4 holes in 1-under, posted the 14-under 57. The score could have been even lower. He had that bogey early. He reached the green on the par 5 18th in 2 shots, but he 3-putted from 18 feet, if you can imagine that. Of course, the round was an all-time best for Wills, although he's no stranger to low scores. He said he's had numerous rounds of 59 and earned the day with 22 career aces. 22, Carl. I just want one. I've never had one in almost 50 years of playing, and he's got 22. You know, he did try to qualify for the Champions Tour upon turning 50 9 years ago, but he wasn't able to make it out of qualifying. Gene Orico, Laurel Hills Director of Golf, verified the score for GolfChannel.com. Will said, "I had never imagined anything like this in my whole life. I was literally out of my mind." Carlos, next week I want to announce, too, before we leave the news, that you and I are both not going to be able to make it for the show next week. So we have two very capable, knowledgeable golfaholics to fill in for us. Our friend from Scotland, Kieran Clark, will do the hosting duties. Bob Chef Riccioli will join him to cover all the action, give a preview for the FedEx Cup coming next the week after next. They'll wrap up the Wyndham Championship and see if Tiger makes the cut or not. So we want to thank those guys in advance for filling in for us next week. And so, Carlos, that wraps up the Par 5 news for August 18th, presented by United Golf Network, who wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands, Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, you name it, they got it. They have an excellent product line. They also offer every golf nut the chance to earn commissions on products through their director's program. United Golf Network provides instant and free access to Global Affinity, which offers discounted travel. Another free perk is membership to My Golf in U.S., which offers discounted rounds of golf in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. So, Carlos, visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com and check out their products, discounts, and their opportunity. Back to you.
And that wraps up the Par 5 News presented to you by United Golf Network. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll have our very important guest, VIGs of the Week.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now before we go to the VIG thread, I just wanted to add, you know, Tiger Woods better win the Wyndham Championship. Otherwise, next week, Bob is going to rant about him. I think he'll rant anyway. But he better win if he doesn't want to make it worse. So, Tiger, the clock's on you, buddy.
A little warning.
Just a little warning, okay? So, anyway.
Even if he'd win, Bob would rant at Tiger.
I know, but sure. That's why I say that he will make it worse if he doesn't win. So, Tiger, please win, okay? You don't want to hear about it.
Well, both of those guys are really good friends of ours, and I'm really excited to see what they do with the show next week. Hopefully they don't get us kicked off the air in the future. So.
That's all we have requested, though. Please don't kick us off the air. That's all the requests we have for them. So anyway, Let's have our VAGs of the week, a very important guest. The first one is David Schaffer. He's the marketing director for the Imperial Hat Company. So, Fred, tell us a little bit about this interview.
Yeah, Imperial Hat Company has been making hats for outdoor activities since 1916, Carlos. They're an old company, been around forever. They recently developed the Cool Core technology, which helps evaporation of sweat and keeps a golfer cooler on the course through this technology. They consider it just as important as a club or you know, part of your equipment. So I thought he did a really great job explaining it. I've been using the Imperial Hat for a while now, and I really do like it. They make a really good product. So we urge everybody to give them a try. But go ahead and play the interview, Carlos.
Let's play it.
The Back Nine Report is constantly striving to give our loyal listeners insights into every part of the golf experience. A large part of golfers wear some type of headwear to shield off the glare and harmful effects of the sun. In that vein, we're very happy to be talking with David Schaffer, who is the marketing director for the Imperial Hat Company. And David, welcome to the Back Nine Report.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, David. To be honest with you, I have worn baseball-style caps all of my life to play golf, and I'm not familiar with the Imperial brand. So could you just tell us a little bit about the company and its history?
Wow, yeah, sure. So Imperial's been around for 99 years. We will be celebrating our 100th anniversary next year in 2016. It started out in Denver, Colorado. 1916 was founded. And as you can imagine, styles and things have changed over the decades, but we're now based in just outside St. Louis, Missouri, and we are one of the leaders in the golf headwear category. So we're one of the top headwear companies in golf.
What are some of the changes that maybe you've seen over the years that have been significant?
Sure, yeah, I mean, in 1916, when we were founded, ball caps really didn't exist. That style, it was more of a top hat, the derby hat, the driver cap, things like that. That was pretty much the style back then. Top hats, people would wear hats with suits and things like that. Over time, styles evolved. In the mid part of the century, everything was fitted up until then, and then kind of from what I understand, the 50s and 60s, Imperial was a leader in the trend to an adjustable cap. And it wasn't until later part of the century that it really became a sports cap, known for baseball-style caps, and we kind of got into the golf market as the PGA Tour grew and, events grew, PGA Tour events, and merchandising at golf shops really flourished in that time period, and there became a market for golf-specific headwear. And ever since then, it's just gotten bigger and bigger and kind of followed the trends of golf apparel. You can see it now in the last century or so, last decade or so, it's been really a performance fabric trend. And even just before that, you saw a move from structured hats, high crown hats, to unstructured hats, and then just recently the performance trend. So, we're really excited to be at the forefront of yet the next evolution, which is cooling performance fabrics. And that's what I'm excited to talk to you about today is our new cooling technology called Cool Core. So we have a whole line of cooling hats called Imperial, powered by Cool Core.
Yeah, and, over the years, color has become such a big thing. Every color, shape, size, all that good stuff. It's so important in branding for the local clubs or business or corporations to get their name and their logo out there. But like you say, now, just like cool wicking shirts, you've adapted this kind of thing to a hat. And so the hat not only shields a balding head from the sun, but it's also a cooling kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly view this cooling hat as a piece of equipment. You're right. I mean, it's a cap. It shields your eyes from the sun. But it also has a hidden technology. So when it gets wet, whether you sweat or you dip it in water, it actually begins this cooling process, and it gives it a cooling sensation. And it does it without any chemicals at all, which is really amazing, because a lot of our competitors and golf apparel companies actually treat their fabrics to give certain characteristics to them, whether it's wicking or cooling. But ours does it without any additives or chemicals at all. So it's really a very, very cutting-edge technology.
Yeah, you know, I just hate that when you have a hat that, and I sweat, you know, I'm like every guy, you know, you go out there, even if it's 55 degrees, I'm sweating on the golf course. And so, you know, that builds up in some of these hats, and so you bend over to start putting, and you get that drip, drip, drip off the bill of the cap. And that doesn't seem to happen with your style.
No, our hat has this, the cooling technology has this characteristic where it actually transports moisture throughout the cap. So, for example, you know, you sweat, it enters the sweatband, and then the actual fiber construction of the fabric, the fibers have this material construction where the fibers are hollow, and it actually pulls the moisture into the center of the fiber and transports it throughout the cap, and that's how we regulate the evaporation rate, which leads to the cooling sensation. So it's really a technology based on evaporative cooling, much like your skin. You know, you sweat, and you have beads of sweat on your skin. When that moisture evaporates, that's when you feel a little cooler. So it's just a natural process that your body uses. We kind of mimic in our fabrics.
So technology is not only for your big 460cc driver or your fancy graphite composite shafted irons. It's also to make you more comfortable on the golf course through this high-technology evaporation cooling type situation for the hat.
I totally agree, and that's kind of what I alluded to earlier when I said I view it as a piece of equipment. You know, when you're hot and you're sweating on the golf course, you're in competition, whether you're on the PGA Tour or in your local club championship, you know, you're going to perform your best when you're most comfortable, whether it's, you know, your body temperature, your nerves, whatever it is, the more you can regulate and control your personal environment, the better you're going to perform. So what I view our technology doing is making you more comfortable. Your body can use that energy that it was normally using to sweat. You can use that energy towards other things like hitting your drive or making a putt. You'll be thinking clearer. You'll be using less energy, and hopefully it'll lead to lower scores. I can't promise that, but that's the end goal.
Now, David, I also see on your website that you not only have golf caps, you make caps for other sporting endeavors also, like nautical and tailgating, football-themed or state-themed hats. And I'm not sure if you know this or not, but the Ohio State Buckeyes surprised the world last year and won the college football championships, and I did notice that you have some Ohio-themed caps as well. Could you tell us a little bit about that line of caps and what you got going on there? It's just not golf caps, but you can you're good for football.
Sure.
And all that other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we are making hats for just about any kind of lifestyle, and, you know, of course we make golf caps, and we sell to pro shops, and we do a good bit of business that way. But we've noticed that a lot of people like to wear our hats and our, you know, products doing other things too, whether it's going to the beach or the pool, maybe it's tailgating. So what we've done is we've offered some of our products online, direct to consumers, with fun little icons on them. So, you know, it might be a nautical theme. something is good for the pool or the beach. We've also have this line of state shapes, which is great for tailgating because the state and the coloring of the cap kind of show your local pride and maybe what team you you support. So we've noticed that you know, just in the last 6 weeks or so, 6 or 7 weeks, we've been live with the website, and it's just going great. We're happy that we can connect with our customers directly and hopefully give them a product that they have fun wearing.
Well, I see, you know, you've got Georgia, Florida, Alabama, California, Mississippi, Louisiana, Kentucky, both Carolinas, Missouri, Oklahoma, Tennessee, and Texas. But I also noticed, and I want to commend you, that I did not see a hat from that state up north. So you must have some very smart guys in Imperial Hat Company.
Well, we had to start somewhere. We didn't want to offer all 50 states to begin with. And quite honestly, we just picked the states that had you know, large state schools or, you know, big football teams. So I'm not going to say that state up north is off limits. It might come at some point, but we've noticed the Ohio people are everywhere. So we figured there was maybe a bigger market to sell Ohio hats to start.
And they'll definitely spend money to buy Ohio back stuff, absolutely. Well, you can buy online, you can visit online, see all the styles for the Imperial Hat Company at www.imperialsports.com. Is there any place else you can find Imperial Caps retail or otherwise?
So, many of your better golf shops across the country carry Imperial Caps. They usually carry them with their logo on the front. But if you look on the tag or inside the crown, you'll see an Imperial label. And, you know, we're happy to make for our best customers and support their brand with our product. And sometimes you'll see them in merchandise tents at professional golf tournaments and things like the U.S. Open. So definitely seek out Imperial and at finer golf shops across the country. And when you go to golf tournaments, definitely look in the merchandise tent for Imperial as well.
Fantastic. And also check out Imperial hats for their Cool Core line. I've been testing one out here for the last couple of weeks, and I can tell you it works very well. You don't get that drip. You don't get the sweat running down the side of your head. It really works well. So, David, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us today.
Oh, it was great being on the show. Thank you for having me.
That was David Schaefer, Marketing Director for Imperial Caps.
And that was our first interview. And now our second one is with Kristen Jungen, who is she's the voice and soul behind Soul Soup Incorporated and her company that features inspirational paintings, prints, books, and greeting cards. She's represented internationally. She is also the author of books, Growing Wings, A View from Inside the Cocoon, and Attempting Flight, Upside Down Without an Edge. So, Fred, tell us a little bit about this interview.
Well, you know, Carlos, it's been said that 90% of golf is mental. And I firmly believe it's actually a little bit higher than that. Kristen Jungen has been studying the effects of the mind on athletic performance for some time. She is basically an artist who has the idea that athletes in general and golfers too can improve their focus and performance on the golf course by using art. You know, an athlete talks about being in the zone. An artist wants to be in the flow. They're the same thing. And Jungen believes that the athlete can improve by studying art to release expectations and open the mind to all possibilities. So it's kind of a unique concept, and you know, I like to explore these kind of things and give people, you know, just something a little bit different to think about. Yeah, we're a golf show, but, you know, a lot of golf is mental. So, you know, maybe some of these things for some people might work and maybe open up a whole new way of thinking. So I was kind of glad to find this lady, and we had a great conversation.
We have never had anyone quite like our guest today on Back 9 Report. Kristen Youngen is a artist, and her work has been featured in the New York Times, Chicago Tribune, and many other North American publications. Her work has been used in university courses, support groups, therapy, and mental health centers across the nation. She's represented internationally by over 400 galleries and gift shops. In her first self-publicized book, Growing Wings, it's currently in its third print. Kristen finds inspiration in nature and the raw and simple truths of being a mother, spiritual seeker, and friend. She's an outspoken activist and works and lives with three children surrounded by the dunes and water of northern Michigan, and her portfolio can be viewed online at mysoulsoup.com. We want to welcome Kristen to the show today. And Kristen, tell us a little bit about yourself. How did I happen to come talk to you about art when it's a golf show?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, it's been a funny little ride here. Thank you so much for having me. And you came to talk to me because I believe that I queried you on LinkedIn about this new research and curriculum that I'm developing for professional athletes. And, it's brand new. It's sort of ancient and brand new at the same time. So the theory itself is very old. The fact that nobody has really made the correlation blows my mind. The theory between between artists and athletes and how using creative techniques helps center professional athletes and open up a part of the brain that we both experience athletes call it in the zone, and as artists we call it in flow. It's the same spot. So I was writing some content for some friends in their website, and they happen to be golfers, pro golfers, and we were talking, and when we have a lot in common, which is really interesting as a production artist and as a person who has a production line with greeting cards and a lot of high-pressure sort of marketing things. It's funny that my athletic friends who are dealing with the same kind of pressure have the same concerns and problems, which is kind of weird.
So they were able to relate. To the pressure of
pulling
off that shot or hitting over the water or whatever. It's the same kind of thing as when trying to make a deadline.
Absolutely. Yeah, and dealing with agents and outside stuff that is completely obscure and has nothing to do with your art whatsoever. That is the stuff that we really, really relate with. I have a friend who is a swing coach, and he's on the tour, and when his players get stuck and when they get blocked. I totally relate with that. And I mean, we've talked for 10 years about that and different things that they can do. And I understand that kind of pressure to create on demand when you have people breathing down your neck and something that was kind of a beautiful thing becomes a corporate thing.
You're using your artwork and your training in art to improve athletes' or golfers' performance by studying works of art, being involved in creation of art, and that helps release maybe some limiting beliefs or open up some barriers and be aware of the other possibilities around them rather than just focused in and being blocked by what they're working so hard at.
Correct. And it's interesting because people, and I think that we're trained to think about things as results-driven, and I first started talking about this, and my friends, like I said, that are in golf are like, yeah, and we're kind of all talking about the same, not just technical aspects, but the same spiritual aspects of our careers and of life and of our families and of our friends and of our whole world. And so when you come to the same, I think that we all do, whether we're in sports or we're corporate people or we're blue-collar workers, whatever, the human experience is multidimensional. And the approach to sports is surprisingly two-dimensional, which is do this, get this result. Do that, get that result. And if I do this 20 times, will it take strokes off my game? So it's a completely different. I am more interested in my own personal journey, and I've written a couple books about it and gone through some difficult times, as we all have at a certain age. You know, it's not easy to be alive today. And so we're taking this artistic approach, which opens up a certain part of the brain. What happens is when we get stressed out, we flood the front of the prefrontal cortex, the part of the brain, with thoughts. So we immediately start to try to think our way out of something. And when we're flooding it with thoughts, we actually jam up the part of the brain that is in flow and that creatively resolves these problems on their own. So our solution is actually creating more of a problem than the problem itself. Does this make sense?
Absolutely. You know, we see so many times, you know, there's an old saying on the tour, beware of the injured golfer, because now they're concentrating on an injury or being sick, and all they're worried about is just hitting the ball and getting around. All
right.
of a sudden, they get done, and they've turned in one of their best scores of the year.
Right.
Because they aren't worried about making that putt or knocking it within 10 feet from 100 yards. They're just letting it go. It's in the flow.
Right.
It's in the moment. It's in the zone,
yeah.
whatever you want to call
yeah.
it. But by using art, you translate that for athletes, and then they can see these possibilities, and it helps them to just enjoy the moment. You know, David Duval is a perfect example of just last weekend. Shot one of his best rounds in years in the third round at the Open Championship, and he's just enjoying being there.
Yeah.
He has no expectations of winning at this point. He's just enjoying his surroundings and playing in the term. So this is exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah, and I had my friends text me, and even during a match, and it's like, it depends, you know. It's like just I have to be reminded, and I, you know, it's a part of this idea that, look, you've already won. You're there. You know, you're in this situation. Tonight, you're still going to go to bed in your same comfortable bed, you know, in your same comfy bed. The people love you that still love you. It's just finding your center again, and we get so off in the other space, in the results, like I said, in the pressure, and really, we kind of focus. In my passion is for art. I am an artist. I understand it. But my bigger passion is talking about the end result. Like, to what end are we doing all this? You know, we get ourselves.
But not let that become a limiting belief so that you don't ever attain it.
Right. Well, also knowing what you're out here doing all this crazy stuff for.
Right.
You know, you have sports psychologists, you have therapists, you have all of this stuff. Ironically, it's not just golfers, too. I've been approached by a lot of football coaches. And so it seems to be the football and the golf, which is surprising to me. The golf makes sense. The football is really cool and super exciting, and I'm very glad they're open to this stuff, too. But, in the sort of getting out of the head and moving into the heart, that is my ultimate passion, is that space. It has been such a journey for me, where I lived inside of my head for such a long time and intellectually tried to address the world from that space. And you really can only get so far as a technician. I think a lot of trainers come from that place. A lot of coaches come from that place. You know, we do a lot of muscle memory. There's so much to it. I mean, these guys are really, any high performer, you know, is doing things at such an intense level and forgetting about the fourth dimension, which is the thing that inspired you in the first place. The thing that got the scouts looking at you, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, we have been talking with Kristen Youngen, who lives in northern Michigan. You can find her at mysoul, S-O-U-L, soup.com. All of her work and information is there. If you'd like to contact her for more or look at her, get one of her books for further information. And, Kristen, again, thank you so much for taking a minute to talk to us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And that was our second interview of the night with Kristen Chung from Soul Soup, and a very interesting take on the mind in sports. So, Fred, any final words before we move on to the practice range?
No, you know, my wife opened me up to some of this mental kind of things many years ago. And I'm not a big practitioner, but I am open to it. And, you know, these kind of things where you can open your mind to all the possibilities and not get tangled up on, you know, making that putt or making the correct swing. Maybe Tiger Woods should get a hold of Chris and start looking at some art, maybe. Maybe that'll open him up a little bit. But no, I found her very interesting talking to her. And if anybody's interested, go to her website, soulsoup.com, and check it out. Give her a shout. I'm sure she'd be happy to talk to you.
Fred, beware. When wives tell you to be open-minded and tell you to be those things, you know, there's something behind it every single time.
Yeah, I understand.
So that wraps up our PhD Very Important Guests Out of the Week segment. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have the practice range. So don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range. Every week, Fred and I pick a topic, and we take our shots at it. That's how we take the practice range. This week, we're going to give you a majors recap. Sadly, the 2015 major season has come to a close. So how can we summarize the majors this year? I mean, it was one of the best seasons to watch ever. The highlight was Jordan Spieth's majors run. That was one of the greatest in golf history. So my take on the recaps is going to be surrounding him. By finishing second to Jason Day in the PGA Championship on Sunday, Spieth completed a remarkable run at golf's major championships this season. He won two major tournaments, the Masters and the U.S. Open, placed second in another, the PGA, and in his worst showing, he tied for fourth at the British Open. That marked the third time since 1971 that a player has finished no worse than fourth in a major during a season. To put this in context, the 22-year-old Spieth in 2015 became only the third player in modern history to finish in the top four at all four majors in the same years. He's joining who? The legends Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods. Tiger did it in 2000, but also in 2005, he had top fives. He finished fifth, but he didn't do the top four. So it has been done only three times. And Spieth wasn't done. You know, 18 players made the cut on all four majors this year. The most since a majors record 19 played on the weekend in 2000. Yeah, the year of Tiger Woods. Yet it was Spieth who was in the majors aggregate scoring champion. And actually, he won it by a lot. It was the lowest score to par ever in the major championships at 54 under. He took 1,090 strokes in the majors for that 54 under. Tiger Woods took 1,095 in 2000, but his aggregate score was 53 under. Keep in mind, to be fair, you know, those cumulative scores from the four Grand Slam events vary widely from year to year based on the venues and weather conditions. But there's no taking away from Spieth's performance this year. Runner-up to him was Jason Day at 35 under. Who else? I mean, that's the one that competed with him there in the PGA Championship and won it. And poor Justin Rose. Man, he was third at 34 under. But you would wonder why the poor Justin Rose. Well, he finished third at a combined 34 under in these majors. It was the best of anyone not to win in the last 30 years. Then again, he's used to it. He finished second to Woods in 2007 and didn't have a major win then either. Spieth, Rose, they all beat Ricky Fowler's last year's total of 32 under, but did it by finishing in the top five at all four majors, though he did not muster a victory. Dustin Johnson was no slouch either. He bested Rory McIlroy's 2014 total of 27 under by shooting 29 under. And the 18 golfers that made the cut at all four majors, well, like I said, it was Jordan Spieth 54 under, Jason Day at 35 under, Justin Rose at 34 under, Dustin Johnson at 29, Louis Oosthuizen at 27 under, Brooks Koepka at 20, Hideki Matsuyama 19 under, Phil Mickelson, he made the cut in all four, 16 under, Sergio Garcia 13 under, Matt Kuchar 12 under, Patrick Reed 11 under, Henrik Stenson 9 under, Paul Casey 7 under, Charles Schwartzel 5 under. Those were the ones under par. Over par, Ernie Els and Webb Simpson at 2 over, Lee Westwood at 5 over, and Jason Duffner. Props to him, he was 8 over, and props to him because somehow he hung around on all four despite being an average of 2 over in each one. He can't touch last year's version of this. It was Kevin Stadler at 20 over for all four, but still impressive for him. But the major memory of this year, it was the competitiveness and how glued you were in each one of those four tournaments. In the Masters, you watched Jordan Spieth go wire to wire and dominate a strong field for his first major championship. You just couldn't stop watching. Then how he battled Dustin Johnson, who, yes, he melted again, but Jordan Spieth did it, and that was spectacular, that finish on the U.S. Open. Zach Johnson won the playoff on the British Open, the Open, and Jordan Spieth, everybody was pulling for him. He was just one shot away from that playoff in the Open Championship, and we already talked about the PGA Championship and how Jason Day dominated there at the end, finally breaking through. So, Fred, how about the majors this past year in the 2015 season?
Well, you know, we talked about it earlier, and I agree with you, Carlos. It was just a great year for the majors, you know, starting with the Masters this year and Jordan Spieth's big win there. Just amazing stuff. And then he followed up at the U.S. Open in June at Chambers Bay with that double bogey on the 71st hole and then made birdie at the last. You know, just amazing stuff. It just held you in there the whole time. So, you know, you talk winners and losers, you know, Jordan Spieth for sure, you know, winning the two, Zach Johnson, Jason Day, you know, Spieth did just miss a grand slam so close, Carlos, my goodness, just one shot out of the playoff at the Open and runner-up at the PGA Championship, that's just amazing, amazing stuff. You know, last year we were talking about Ricky Fowler being top five in all four majors. How about Jordan Spieth being within four shots of winning all four majors? You know, that's just unreal to me. You know, losers, you know, if you can be a loser and perform well in all four majors, Dustin Johnson, you know, close again but no cigar. You know, he had the missteps there on the back nine at Chambers Bay when the tournament looked like it was kind of his to take. You know, he was in contention at the PGA and then, you know, kind of shot himself out of it with that eight at the first hole on Sunday. At the Open Championship, he was the leader after 36 holes. Didn't look like anybody could touch him. All of a sudden on the weekend, he just, you know, he disappears. So, If he can ever figure out the mental side of the game and not let the pressure get to him, he's got the talent. He's the next guy up for me, you know, that looks like to me. But he's the big loser this year, really. Justin Rose, as you mentioned him, he was in position a lot. Just a sloppy hole here and there left him outside looking in. You know, he is one of the most consistent players on tour, just there shot after shot, but just a loose play just here and there just really cost him a lot this year. And, you know, we still got to talk about Tiger. I mean, my goodness, just one of his poorest years ever. You know, he is just rapidly becoming a footnote in golf history. Phil Mickelson, you know, as you said, made the cut in all four, had the runner-up at the Masters of Spieth, but really after that, really not much of a factor. But he did make the cut in all four, so good for him. You know, the time of Woods and Mickelson is probably rapidly approaching the end. A name that popped out to me when I was looking down through that list that you were reading today, Brooks Koepka, T33 at the Masters, T18 at the U.S. Open, T10 at the Open Championship, and T5 last week at the PGA. He had a very good year in the majors. So, you know, can we see a major championship in Brooks Koepka's future? I think definitely yes. Big loser, Fox Sports was a bust as far as their television coverage of the USGA events went. They do have 9 more years to get it right, so hopefully they'll improve a little bit next year. The USGA went overboard in drying out Chambers Bay to a toasty brown shade that made the fairways and greens resemble paved roads and nearly impossible to play. St. Andrews is always fun to watch an Open Championship on. The playoff was a bonus. Jordan Spieth, as we mentioned, just missing out on making history at the Old Course. Whistling Straits, Herb Kohler, and Pete Dye were all huge stories at the PGA Championship. With names like Rose, Spieth, Day, Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy all in contention during the week, the PGA once again did not fail to bring the goods to golf fans. We started this golf season back in October of 2014, and with just one more PGA Tour event remaining, the Wyndham Championship this week at Greensboro, before the FedEx Cup playoffs and the President's Cup, the season is rapidly winding down. Kind of sad, but is it my imagination or did 2015 seem like one of the best years ever for the majors? With Rory, Jordan, Jason, Rose, DJ, Ricky, and a host of other great young players coming up, professional golf and the majors should prove interesting for the next several years. Carlos, I'm already counting the days to April of 2016.
I don't have them right now, but I will be counting them and letting you know how many are left. So.
Well, Kieran will probably tell us.
Yeah, he has it in his mind right now. He's counting them now. Well, that wraps up our practice range, and definitely the major is definitely one of the best seasons ever that we witnessed. So, can looking forward to it, and well, our consolation prize is going to be the FedEx Cup coming up. Our final putts, I'm going to take the first shot here, and I'm going to talk about the Guardian there in the UK saying that, you know, golf doesn't need the Olympics, and the Olympics sure don't need golf. And I can see their points from the budget format to the economic format, to the economic and environmental concerns surrounding the Rio course. The Olympic golf course is on course to be a major letdown. Golf doesn't fit those massification partners, parameters of the current sports. Yes, it requires maybe the most intensive maintenance and security of any other sports. Yes, it doesn't give current players any incentive to come and play. I mean, money, there's no money to be won, only national pride of being the player from your country to win the medal. And to traditional golf fans, that doesn't seem to matter other than when the USA plays versus Europe in the Ryder Cup or Solheim Cup or versus the rest of the world of the President's Cup. But, you know, that still is one country versus, with 12 players, not two, versus a continent or the rest of the world. So maybe the national pride would be for the US fans. The sport is not popular in that host country. I mean, they don't even know about it, I would say. So you cannot expect fans to be swarming the course. They'll be watching soccer first, basketball and volleyball, and maybe every other sports considering, you know, going to the golf course. And going back to the national pride thing, yeah, fans can only see their best two players on the rosters, so that eliminates a lot of fan favorite players to be taking some vacations that they will hardly care about who wins. They even compare to the Winter Olympics in Beijing as an idea more sensible than bringing golf to the Olympics. But, you know, it's hard to argue that. But Rome wasn't made in a day, and it always is about educating people. If you don't make it available in such a grand venue, you're closing the doors on a great opportunity to let it become just what it needs to become, a great Olympic sport. Any other effort against that is just detrimental to me, to the sport of, to the Olympic spirit of growing sports and bringing it to the masses. So, no, I think it should be there. Another news, you know, the first five names on the U.S. Walker Cup, Paul Hostler, Bryson DeChambeau, Lee McCoy, Maverick McNealy, and Hunter Stewart. The resumes of these college players are all befitting honor. DeChambeau is the NCAA champion. Hostler has qualified for three U.S. Opens. McCoy is a first-team All-American. McNeely was the college player of the year. And Stewart had three college wins this past season, as well as taking the Northeast amateur title. The remaining five golfers on the 10-man squad will be selected after this week's U.S. Amateur at Olympia Fields at suburban Chicago. At least two of those players must be mid-amateurs. That means 25 years or older, with Scott Harvey, Mac McCoy, and Nathan Smith being the leading candidates. If the amateur winner is an American, he will get one of the remaining spots as well, leaving a crowded list remaining contenders like Jordan Newbridge, Denny McCarthy, Robbie Shelton, Kyle Jones, Matthew Naismith, and Jack McGuire still holding their breath. But there's one more name that you should keep your eye on, and, you know, that guy topped the field at the Pacific Coast Amateur. He set the course record at the Rich Harvest Farms in the second round of the Western Amateur and finished runner-up in the toughest tournament of the summer. He has risen from 49 to 12 in the World Amateur Golf Rankings in 6 weeks, and is the player to watch this weekend at the U.S. Amateur. And to think he almost gave up the game several years ago. His name is Aaron Weiss. Remember that name, a 19-year-old sophomore from the University of Oregon by way of Lake Elsinore in California. He's the amateur breakthrough player of the summer, something Casey Martin, the Oregon coach who recruited him, saw coming. And Fred, I think the Walker Cup people should see it coming too very soon. Aaron Weiss.
Yeah, I'm gonna take just a second and disagree with you on the Olympics. I'm still not sold on that. Maybe I will be after I see it, but I just don't. I know everybody's really high on it. A lot of people that are really positive and big guys in golf think it's a great thing, but I have my doubts for that whole thing. Hey, Rory McIlroy confirmed last week at the PGA Championship he will not play in the Australian Open in November. Said, I was only contracted to play the one Australian Open, but then after winning in 2013, I wanted to show respect to the tournament by defending my title, but it's not on my schedule this year. Tiger, you know, he's setting up his career after golf, which may be sooner than later. More than 70 people streamed into Tiger Woods' new restaurant, The Woods Jupiter at Harborside Place in Jupiter, Florida last week. Woods was not at the opening for the general public, but several staff members said he had hosted several VIP parties at the restaurant before flying to the PGA Championship. Staff members said he has been a regular sight at the restaurant over the last several weeks, looking over the final details. Woods lives on nearby Jupiter Island and also plans to make his worldwide headquarters next door to the restaurant. There is a great piece on why the press loves Jordan Spieth at Grantland.com. Here's a quote. The speed with which Spieth has conquered golf, two major titles at age 21, one stroke short of the playoff that would have made it three, is only slightly more remarkable than the speed with which he has conquered the golf media. According to Golf Digest, Dave Kindred, only one young golfer was loved so instantaneously and unanimously, Arnold Palmer. Spieth is as close to Palmer as anybody. In my mind, he's instantly likable. And he does it on the course. He does it off the course. We have got a lot of years to watch Mr. Jordan Spieth, and I look forward to it. Carlos, that wraps up tonight's show, I believe.
Yes, sir. Well, Back Nine wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Thank you for listening to us for the past 90 minutes. Special thanks to our VIG's very important guest of the week, David Schaefer and Kirsten Young. And don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, and also through TuneIn or download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.